Hello, everybody. We are back for another episode of Talking Classic Cars. You're here with me, Jay Ward.
And I'm Wayne Carini, and we're talking classic cars, of course. But Jay, you know, it's been so long since we've seen each other. Amelia, it seems like, you know, 2 or 3 months ago. It was just a couple weeks ago almost.
Yeah. You know, there's been so many car things happening around the world that you and I have been bouncing in and out of, and I'm excited to get into it today and talk. But most importantly, what I'm excited about is it is Women's History Month, and we have so many great women in the world of automotive, which are finally getting recognized. And you recently met with Shirley Muldowney, which I am super excited about hearing about.
What a pleasure. As they say, what a kick in the pants. She is really fantastic. She was somebody that I looked up to for so many years because it was such a struggle for her to get into drag racing and then to get to the top of her fields and beat all the big guys. I mean, Big Daddy Don Gartlett's, Perdomo, Connie Coletta. She beat them all at their game, and they weren't happy about it at all, that a woman had come and taken over their sport. And so she had a very rough time, but she plowed through it. She's a winner, and just such a pleasure to talk to.
Yeah, when I was a kid, the movie was Heart Like a Wheel, was the Shirley Muldowney story that really got so many people my age interested in that there was a woman in motorsport, that it wasn't this all dudes club. You know, yeah, she had to get her elbows out to be part of that world. But what you're saying is really important. There's a lot of women that are able to have some success in motorsport, but she truly beat the best at their own game. And not a lot of, you know, people can say that when they come from the outside in. It's one thing to get into the sport and have some success. She truly succeeded at the top level. So why don't we just let her do the talking and hear what she had to say?
Sounds good to me.
It's a badass car, boy, I'll tell you. Two fuel pumps. And that's what the PSI does. I regulate the amount of fuel on the pumps. You know, I do a burnout on one pump. Then when you're ready to go, you pull it back right here. This here, pull that back.
It's a go.
It's a go.
Hey, it's Wayne Carini from Talking Classic Cars, and I'm here at the Savoy Museum in Cartersville, Georgia, and I'm here with somebody I've admired almost my whole life. I mean, you know, when I started watching drag racing, I hung out at Connecticut Dragway a lot, and it was a wonderful thing to see somebody like you do so well. You know, it's always fun to see people succeed, but somebody that they never thought you would succeed.
Yes.
And look at what you did.
You
broke the barrier and made sure that you kept going. So Shirley Muldowney is here with us.
Thank you, Phil.
And boy, what a thrill when you walked in the door today and I was standing here and the first thing you did is you bolted to that car and you jumped right in.
Yes.
I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't even fit in there. And I'm not that big, but you have to have a way of getting in. I saw you get in.
Yes, you have to know how to do it.
That's right.
Of course, the car is built for me, so it's rather easy. But before my knee replacements, I was able to enter the race car and exit the race car a whole lot easier.
So we watched the video today of your life, and it was my eyes watered up several times, but it's a really great story of your life, and if somebody were to tell me about 20 years ago that I'd be sitting here talking to you, I'd say you were crazy.
Really?
But yeah, absolutely.
Not
absolutely.
That hard to find.
Well, but how many Wallys? And to explain to people, Wally is the ultimate. It's the trophy, but you have to earn it. You certainly have to earn it. It's not like a committee choosing that your car is better than Joe's. You have to earn that.
Yeah, you go out and it's a series of eliminations, you know, one against the other. They start out with the quickest 16 for qualifying, and then come Sunday, that's race day. 16 cars, one round, you now have 8.
Yep.
Then you have 4.
It's not like you can come back again. You're one and done.
No, that's right, yes.
One and done.
There is no sandbagging on the backstretch.
Right.
And you get beat, you're out. You're
that's
in the
it.
Trailer playing cards. That's what we used to play cards. But, the sport, it's a lesson in learning how to be ready. Not to jump the gun, but how to be ready for probably the ride of your life.
You know, we watch the NHRA on television now, and you see these huge teams with all these sponsors and all this money. That wasn't you. When you got into this, it was by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, well, that's what drove me out of the sport, the cost of it.
Yeah.
And I'd probably still be in, probably as a car owner. But it's just they've turned it into a money pit, I must say. And it doesn't delight me. But these crew chiefs who tend to think they're the stars, and some of them are.
Yeah.
Take that away from them. But the crew members work a whole lot harder than the crew chiefs do.
Right.
They shout orders and everybody runs and hides. But the way it is today, it's, again, a money pit, and you don't go with a spare slug. Couples, you don't tear it apart between rounds. They just put another, as they say, bullet in the chassis. And they've turned it into a rich kid's sport.
Yeah, yeah.
And the little guy that used to be able to look at it and see visions of, hey, I could do this. If I had my dad helped me build my hot rod, I could go out and, there's a class for every car. It's not that way any longer.
But what really intrigues me about you is that you had this drive, and there's so many things involved, time management. I mean, you have to make sure that you're at the event. You have to make sure you make the round. You have to make sure the car's ready for when the round comes around and you're in it. I mean, there's so many things involved, and you were doing it almost on your own. You had your son with you, but yet it was a small team.
A small team? Well, three guys and yours truly. They would. I went with the car most of the time.
Yeah, so you'd ride in the truck.
I rode the right seat for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
At the time, I enjoyed it, but it's now. They fly in with their first class boarding pass and their one hand, a helmet in the other, and steer me in the right place.
Yeah.
The drivers today have no idea.
Yeah.
What it took to build the sport to where it is today.
Yeah, but you hit it, I think, just at the sweet spot. It was really the sweet spot, the 70s and 80s. I think that was when television was sort of just starting to pay attention to what was going on in the sport. And it was something a lot of people couldn't wrap their head around, how you were so intrigued to see a car go for
driving
just
a straight line.
Go 300 miles an hour.
Yes.
But what you have to do is you have to go to the track and you have to watch one.
You can see all you can see on television. But if you haven't seen it live, you haven't seen anything. You've got to see it live. These cars are spectacular. The fuel cars. Fuel meaning nitromethane.
Right. And, I haven't been in probably 25 or 30 years.
I know.
When I used to go, it was the coolest thing to sit, within 20 feet of the cars as they're revving the motor. And the sound is one thing, but the vibrations as they pound your chest.
Yeah, well,
the sound waves.
Yeah, you're talking like today, 10,000 horsepower.
Yeah. And you were driving cars with how many horsepower?
About 8,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
And I stopped in 2003, and what they do, they just they add more nitro to the tank, percentage wise, and a cubic inch always stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they put some limits on what used to be unlimited fuel dragster. Love the sound of that. It's beautiful. Now has to be so far off the ground. So long. We're all relegated to that rear gear, which I feel is too low.
Mm-hmm.
It taxes the motor, and it just RPMs the hell out of that car coming down through the lights. And there's some changes that I would love to see made that would lower the cost of the sport.
Well, that's a key
for the little guy.
Yeah, yeah. So what is the engine running in RPMs when you go through the lights?
I don't really know.
Probably 15,000, 16,000 RPM.
I don't really know what the
when
RPM
you sat in the car
is.
Today, you said two gauges, that's it.
I have, I had two gauges, oil pressure gauge, which is the, that's the X-ray of what's happening inside that engine, and a PSI gauge. And that what that does, that tells you fuel pressure. And you want a certain pressure with the for the burnout, certain pressure for backing up at an idle, and then pull on the fuel, both pumps, for the go. And we do have two fuel pumps and do a burnout on only one in high gear and to keep the RPMs down. Now they have a throttle stop, which the driver gets in and just buries the throttle to the floor, and it can go just so far because they have a throttle stop on it. So that, you know,
it's not popping the motor.
We don't cultivate any new drivers that have a good sound and feel for it. Yeah. I then and now, I'm nothing but a sound and feel driver, and that's the only thing I know. I can go out there and I can do a burnout with the sound. And the feel of it, and without a throttle stop. Most of your drivers out there today could not do that.
When I was going to drag races years ago, there'd be a group of guys that would come to down. So there'd be Perdome and you and Connie and Big and a bunch of people. And it was like a show that went around the country. You know, it was wonderful to be able to see all you guys in one spot. That was so cool.
The biggies, the big ones. And the fans could get close to us. The fans loved the cars back then, but they were scared to death of them. And they would need be very, very strong cars. They are, you're fixing to have a problem once you fire that thing up. And it's just, if you lean on it hard, it's gonna talk back. And you can't give it too much because they, you know, they're prone to breakage. And breakage means nitrated oil out on hot exhaust. Fire.
Right, and you've had your share of those things.
Oh, yeah, I sat behind it for a number of years, then, 3 years in the funny car, and I just got tired of
burned.
Getting lit up, you know, I got tired of it.
And you know, you were talking about feel, and that maybe is a little bit something that some of the new drivers don't actually have. I mean, it's...
No, they don't.
So, for instance, when you get too much power to the engine, and then all of a sudden the tires break loose... You know, so you got to have that feel. What's the right amount to get the job done, but yet not get in trouble?
You just said it. And, it goes out there, and then finally, somewhere downwind, you're going to get it one-to-one, and that's what you want. They have to tune these cars to the point where it is, you know, they don't overpower the racetrack, because then we overpower, you turn the tires, you spin the tires, the competition is gone.
You chatter them a little bit at the line, or even even a quarter of the way down, you break them loose, and that's it, the end of the race.
The competition has won the drag race.
That's right.
So it's all about getting a happy medium out there. And these crew members are very sharp. A lot of the crew chiefs are very good at it.
They know how to dial it in.
They are very good at what they do. And then we have some phonies out there, some fakers, and they're drawing these big salaries, and they can't hit their ass with both hands. Excuse me.
That's all right. But you know, it was all of that. That's what you had. And it was a little bit of head games going on, you know, with Connie, with Don. You know, it was that head game thing. And with the dragster painted pink, they couldn't miss you.
You know, it goes without saying.
They'd look over and glance over and go, oh, no, not her again.
Yeah, not her again. Yes, you just said it.
That's great. That's great. Pleasure to meet you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Yes,
thank you so much for talking with us. And
thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing the video this coming Wednesday in FS1.
Yes.
And it'll be out there for many years to come.
Yes. Thanks to Fox Sports.
That's right. Well, thank you.
Thankful for that.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Wow, Shirley Muldowney, I cannot believe when you told me her age at this point. You said 84.
84 years old.
Unbelievable. And so much still heart and energy and positivity, especially when you hear about what circumstances she overcame to be so successful in the racing world. I'm so glad you had that time with her. That was at the Savoy?
Yes, Savoy Museum down at Cartersville, Georgia. I mean, just a wonderful place, fantastic place, especially to do an interview with someone with the stage presence that they have. It's really great. You know, when she walked in the door, I was there when she saw her drag race car for the first time. She hasn't seen it in a couple of years. She just had some knee replacement surgery. She gave her purse to a friend of hers, and she went over and she jumped in the car. She literally, I said, "Do you want a hand?" She goes, "I got this." And she whipped her leg over and she jumped in that car. It was unbelievable. Just like she was, that's her office. That's her home. And that proved the point to me right there. You know, she's a no frills girl. She gets the job done.
Yeah, super cool. You also got to meet with Cindy Sisson, who is a person that I really admire because she's worked so hard for women in motorsport and really elevating these women, especially the past in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, who didn't have much of a voice.
Hey, it's Wayne Carini from Talking Classic Cars, and we're here at the Savoy Museum in Cartersville, Georgia. And I'm here with my good friend Cindy, who's got a great story and working with a great organization. Tell us about that.
Thank you, Wayne. It's an honor to be with you. I've always admired you over the years at many, many car shows. But I'm the executive director of Women in Motorsports North America. We were founded in April 2 years ago by Lynn St. James and Beth Peretta. And in the simplest form, we're a community of professionals, males and females, advocating and celebrating women in motorsports.
And what you've done here today is really something. You brought in one of the greatest women in motorsports, Shirley Moldani. That the seminar we did just blew me away. And I was on the stage doing it, but it still blew me away. But today, when she walked in and she jumped in that car, I mean, it's just like she stopped for a second. She handed you her purse and she jumped in the car.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
No fear.
Going to see an old friend for a while, you know, and I think that was more than it. This car is like her best buddy.
Yeah. 2003, it's been her good friend. And funny, the car that was originally going to be on the display here was her 1989, her last win against Daryl Gwynn. And about 3 days before the Don Garlitz Museum was going to ship it, 3 days before she said, no, it's got to be the last pass car. So literally Garlitz Museum had to like move everything out and bring that car in. And I'm so glad they did because that car shows really well in this museum.
So good. Looks so good. Yeah. You have women in motorsports in a gallery here is showing all these women in motorsports. You know, it's so great to see all the contributions that women have done to car racing and motorsports in general. But to see all the different cars, I'm very good friends with Erin Crocker.
Well, Erin's actually on our working group.
Oh, is that right?
So this is an 8-car exhibit until July 7th. This is our premier car with Shirley Muldowney, but in the exhibit hall, we have Danica 378 car. Mm-hmm. We have Danica Patrick's 2005.
So those are Indy cars.
Indy cars.
Yeah.
Where she won Rookie of the Year awards that year. We have Emily Arenas, which is a sweet young lady locally here who's racing in the Legends cars.
In the Legends cars, yeah.
She just turned 19 this week, and she'll be here tomorrow night. Sarah Montgomery, MX5 Cup. Of course, Kristen Lingefelder with a Z06.
Yeah, she was just here.
And Erica Enders, junior dragster, 6-time, you know, pro stock champion, winningest female driver. You know,
wow.
Pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Pretty big deal.
That's great. That's a great display of so many good drivers and cars, that's for sure. And so this, are you planning now? This is a National Automobile Museum Convention.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you're going to have so many of these museums wanting the same type of displays, and Shirley's going to be in demand like crazy. Not that she isn't already.
Yeah.
But so many museums want this kind of stuff so they can bring in new people into their museum.
Well, that's why this was a perfect opportunity to share our story, not only with Shirley's documentary, but as you know, Wayne, we've done Betty Skelton's Boundless documentary, mm-hmm. Paula Murphy Undaunted. Those two documentaries alone have won well over 20 film festivals.
Wow.
Both were nominated for International Motorsports Film Awards out of the UK, and Betty won a Gracie Award. And a Gracie Award is the highest award a woman can get in film and television.
Wow.
And we believe Shirley will win as many, if not more, of those documentaries. And as we keep continuing to make them, we're creating a movement that is very exciting for the museums. I mean, what a better place to showcase the history of X. And that's what the summit's, this conference has been fantastic, because there were so many tracks focused on, you know, the 52% of the population that most museums aren't even talking to.
Right.
And what does that mean? More tickets sold, more sponsorships, sustainability for the museums.
You know, the one thing, and we're here at this conference, the one thing I really love is that every time a museum sort of, an older museum sort of folds their doors, you go, oh, it's all over, and then four more pop up. And like this. I mean, when I came here 2 years ago, I just couldn't believe my eyes what this was. And Ken Gross had told me all about it, but it's still, and then when I walked in, I went, oh my God, it's sort of like going to the Barber Museum.
Oh, yeah.
You open the door to the Barber Museum, and I closed the door real quick, and I said, I just didn't see that, did I? And it's an unbelievable
surprise
experience.
And delight.
Yeah. So more museums, and they get bigger and better, and just it's so good. It's like so good for our industry.
Football stadiums,
yeah.
You know, they just keep growing bigger and bigger, and roofs and no roofs. But the Savoy is magical.
Is.
I mean, even the storage back there that you're not even allowed into, unless you could become a card-carrying member. Folks, you should become a card-carrying member, because they have some really classic cars back there.
Yeah. Well, it's a great museum. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Hopefully, tremendous success with us all.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to see you in another museum, maybe. But we'll see each other at car shows. We see each other all the time.
Maybe Pebble this year.
Maybe Pebble.
Maybe another female forum.
That's great. Done. Great spot. And we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
You know, it's really great. Cindy's a wonderful person. I know her very well from going to different auto events, you know, across the country, concours and rallies and things. She has helped out, and she's been working at this for so many years to get this going and rolling. It's finally catching some traction. And then, of course, to have a documentary that was done, and we saw that documentary at the Savoy Museum, and then it was on FS1 this past week on Wednesday night. It was wonderful. It was about an hour and a half documentary. So Cindy's worked very, very hard for all this stuff, and she deserves accolades for doing so many things for women in motorsports.
Yeah, I met her at the Audrain probably 4 years ago, early days, maybe first or second year of the Audrain, and immediately she was just such a spirit, so alive and so excited about amplifying women in motorsport, how much room there was at the table for that to happen. So I'm really glad you connected with her. I'm really glad you got the time with Shirley Muldowney. What other women in motorsports have you connected with lately? You've had a couple other good interviews.
Yeah, so the museums were what we were talking about while we were there down at the Savoy. It was the National Automobile Museum Association. And so Terry Coppens from the Stalls Museum was there. Terry does a wonderful job. She's the general manager of the museum. I'm here with Terry from the Stalls Museum in Michigan, and one of my favorite places in the world.
We love having you.
Yeah, it's a great place. We do a lot of things together, especially an autism program every year.
Yes.
The Stalls Museum is something very, very special to me because of the autism charity event that you do, but also the museum and all the people like yourself that work there, just great people.
We have about 100 cars on the floor. There are approximately 230 in the whole collection, so that we get to rotate it. So it's always something new when you come in. We do have, as you said, the Wurlitzer Theater organ, plus many other automated musical instruments. We force you to go through our music room, because many people come expecting just cars. Yeah. And when they come in, if they kind of looked in that room, they might go, oh, no cars in there, so they won't go. But once we make them go in, sometimes they don't want to leave that world.
Well, I don't. Every time I come.
It is. It's incredible. It's the engineering and technology behind those, just as much as the cars that, you know, tell a great story.
But the musical instruments, so these are self-playing. These are the ones where the paper roll goes and it plays the songs, and it's just unbelievable. Most of them built in the 1800s and early 1900s.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. They range from late 1800s to probably about 1930s.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we get into the museum, and it's just the car selection is just unbelievable. I mean, so you've got everything spanning from classic cars right up into the movie cars, from The Great Race.
Yes, and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So we've got some great movie cars in there.
Yes.
And the signage and all the signs on the wall and the neons. But the biggest thing, I think, is just the diversity and the beauty of some of the cars. I mean, you've got some award-winning automobiles, you know,
yes.
Pebble Beach, the Detroit Concours last mm-hmm. year, you won
yes.
Best in Show there.
Mm-hmm.
So
Seth Delahaye is here at the Savoy.
That's
we have
right.
it loaned
yeah.
here right now, so you can come here and see it until, I think, the end of March
yeah.
Is when they would turn that one. So we have two other cars here that we've loaned to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been great partnering with them for this. And but yes, we do have Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which is not the main driver, but the self-driving Chitty. So it had some screen time, has its SAG card, so it's definitely a movie car. But in our cars, we have over 100 different makes. So we do have something for everybody. We have mostly American. We do have one row that has more of the foreign cars, but we've got something for everybody. Something everybody can look at and have a story about.
Yeah.
Even the kids, because we have the Grinch car from the Grinch movie. So even the little kids can come in and say, I know that car. So.
And you got the professor's car from the Great Race, where mm-hmm. it goes up and down.
And the Leslie. We actually have two of each of those. And the Leslie, the one of the Leslies that we have, the Leslie Special, that was Tony Curtis and Natalie Wood's car, we are sending down here to Savoy as
oh,
well.
Oh, that's great.
So that one's going to be down here for 3 months, I believe, starting in April.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of cars that are going to appear here too at the same time.
Okay, yeah, because I think they're doing movie cars.
Movie cars.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you have some very important cars now. Most museums these days are looking for Tuckers. You have a Tucker.
Yes, we do.
It's a great car. And then you've got one car that nobody else has got, and that's the Chrysler Turbo.
Yes. Yeah, that, as a matter of fact, coming down here with the NAMM group this weekend, I've had, I think, three museums have come up and asked me if they could borrow that car.
Yeah.
And that one doesn't really leave much, but one or two of the places are local to us.
So okay.
It's easy for us to say, okay, maybe we can do that. But the hard part for us is that when people come to the museum, they're coming expecting to see that,
yeah.
and it's gone, and that's kind of a hard thing for people to swallow.
Yeah, so. I know. It's a car that they expect to see
yes.
every time.
Yes.
It's tough to say, well, no, you have to go to this museum, or you have to wait 6 months
right,
to see it again.
Right, right. Yeah, we definitely won't send that one out for long periods of time.
Yeah.
So for the most part, they want them for a weekend show or something, so we could probably work that out.
Yeah, and you let me sit in it and start mm-hmm. it up once, which
yes.
was a pretty cool thing.
That was at St. John's.
It was St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
You got a good memory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then, so tell us about the Wolitzer, though. I mean, this is one of the best things of the museum, I think.
It is an incredible piece. It is 1920s, and it was, they call it the Wurlitzer's Wurlitzer, because it was built in the Wurlitzer factory in Cincinnati, and it was moved to their mansion, and it was never sale tag, never, no invoices or anything were done for it, no serial number on it. And then when the Wurlitzer family, they summered in California, and because Cincinnati is not a good place to be for the winter. And when they were there, the church that they attended did not have an organ. So they donated this organ from their home to their church.
And
there.
So like everybody doesn't know what a Wurlitzer is, mm-hmm. but it's an unbelievable organ.
Yeah.
And this is not just an organ. This is a musical instrument that plays other musical instruments on its own.
Yes. This one, well, it's not technically on its own, because this one is different in the sense that we have to have somebody play it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be, we have world-renowned organist, Dave Wickerham. Thankfully, he lives in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So I tell him, when you're traveling, you really have to pass us to go anywhere, because you got to come through Lower Michigan unless he goes through Wisconsin. But so he stops in and he will record for us. So the software that they've created records the organist's movements.
Oh, great.
So that we can play it back. But if the organ goes out of tune, you will hear it out of tune. So mm-hmm. it's not like a sound recording or an audio recording. It is just the organ is receiving the information in a different way.
That's
so
great.
But
now that,
everything plays.
He is the organist for the Detroit Red Wings, is that true?
No. That
okay.
is Lance Luce.
Oh, comes.
Yes,
yes.
We've had Lance. He comes for...
He wears the sequin jacket.
Yes. He is an amazing organist as well.
He
comes for the Autos for Autism event and donates his time.
Okay,
and
that's great.
Yes, and he plays because the foundation that we raise the money for is Ted Lindsay Foundation,
gotcha.
Which is... Ted Lindsay was a former Detroit Red Wings, so okay. we connect them all together.
Okay.
It's just been truly...
Because
really
that's really the only time I've been to the museum is during that mm-hmm. charity event. That's why I thought he was the organist.
Yes. No. Dave has come through. We've had Dave there for our Veterans Day event, which is our second largest event, or actually Veterans Day is probably our largest. And that's a day that we raise funds to go to a veterans charity, which is the medical service dogs. And they train dogs for veterans and for those in need for service animals, and they're just incredible, incredible place. So
if we were to come to the museum next week when you go back home, because we're here at the Savoy right now, what is the newest car in the collection?
Oh, well, the newest one that we just brought out, we have a Mustang. We've got a GT350 and a GT500.
Oh, cool.
Those were two more recent ones that we put out on the floor. We've had to move some things around and take some things out. But we've got, so kind of leaning a little bit more into the muscle cars now that we're getting into. So, because we have lots and lots of brass. We have lots and lots of 30s, 40s cars. And, you know. But I still don't think, well, according to him, you can never have enough. So,
what's your favorite car in the collection?
Mine go in levels. My all-time top favorite is the 1931 Court Le Grand Speedster. It is a recreation of the lost Court, but I just, that car just oozes style the time period, and it's just an incredible piece. But the 31 Chrysler Imperial is one that I love to drive. The Tucker I love for the story. The Turbine I love because it's a Chrysler. My dad worked for Chrysler. My family worked for Chrysler. So
what car are you bringing this year to the Smith Heritage?
We are bringing our 1938 Peugeot d'Armont.
Oh, I love that car.
It's so pretty. Yeah.
Well, you got great selection of cars. Tell us how to get there, what the website address is, and what times you're open during the week.
Okay, well, we are located in Chesterfield, Michigan. The website is Stahls Auto, and that's STAHLSAUTO.com. And our regular days are Tuesdays 1 to 4, and the first Saturday of the month is 11 to 4. We do a special event other than our website calendar does have our Autos for Autism and other special events listed, but we have another event coming up next week, I believe it is our night at the museum. So many people come in and they're just overwhelmed with the cars. You see how many cars we have there, and it's just, you know, you can walk through chronologically, but you don't take notice of the signs and the neons. Mm-hmm. So we shut off all the overhead lights, you can walk through, and then we do it in the evening. Everybody gets a glow necklace when they come in, and you can walk through and see the neon signs lit and the gas pumps lit, so they get to stand out a little bit.
That's an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. Excellent idea.
It's a lot of fun.
What's the date of our autism charity event this year?
That will be July 20th, and it's one of the only days the museum is free to get in. So we appreciate donations when you come in, or we usually say walk through and donate what you feel it's worth on the way out. Mm-hmm. But those on for the autism event, we do charge because, again, that's a fundraiser. Every penny we take in does go to the charity, so we don't keep any of it. We're hoping for some special guests along with you as well, and we're looking to possibly doing another panel discussion because that one did go off very well last year.
Yeah, it did. So. I think people really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And of course, you got the car show outside,
which
usually brings a lot of people, a lot of cars. Yes. You got a band outside, a lot of special things going on. So you've got everything on the inside.
And the outside is free. So you can come and join the outside, and we'll have raffles. We'll have a food truck out there. We'll have, like you said, the band as well. If weather holds out, we'll definitely have a bounce house for the kids. So we want it to be a big family event and bring the kids and everything.
So I look forward to coming back again this year and helping out with that. And thank you for all you do for autism.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to my first ride on the mechanical elephant these days. So I mean, we got to.
Wendell will be waiting.
Okay. All right. Well, we look forward to seeing you, and hope our viewers and people listening will be able to visit your museum and help out.
Yes, we'd love that. Thank you.
See you in July.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you.
The Stahls Museum is a gem because you would never know in the middle of this farm type countryside, and all of a sudden you come up on the Stahls Museum and the cars that are in there. Oh my God. It's unbelievable the amount of great automobiles they have. I mean, the cream of the crop.
Oh, yeah.
So what else you been doing?
There's so much going on, so many things I'm getting ready for. I've got some fun projects at work, which I can't talk about yet, but there are some fun things on the horizon. Made a little bit of progress on my own car on the Porsche, the 997. I think I told you about that. I've been building the Porsche Racing Green Metallic car. I got a GTS front bumper mounted on that, which was a lot of work. And that car is finally all ready to go. So I'll be talking a little bit more about that car soon, but that's been a really fun project. It's hard to think of a Porsche 997 as a modern classic, but the car was built in 2009. I mean, the thing is, you know, it's 15 years old this year, so it's not a modern car. So it's been a lot of fun. and kind of figuring out about the next classic. I came very close on a 308 GT4. You know, we talked about those cars recently, and I came very close on one that I found over in Europe, but I did not bite the bullet on it. I'm still looking for the perfect one. It's got to be a 75 or older for me because of smog stuff in California. And those of you out here in California, you know, if you get a 76 or newer car, it's a pain to have to get it smog.
It's not easy to get it through smog, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've got a 76 911S, my little blue car, what we call Little Blue, and the air pump and the dialing back the injection and all the stuff to get it to pass. It's just, it's a little extra work. I have a buddy here with a 308 GT4 in the Bay Area. It's a 77. And every time he gets the car smogged, he has to take it to a shop. They put catalytic converters on the car, all this stuff, and then it gets limp mode into a smog station. It passes, and then all the stuff has to come back off because the car won't run with it on, which kind of defeats the whole purpose. You know, he's trying to be compliant. He's not cheating and putting some racing system, but the car, the way it was built, it just won't pass. It can't pass. Right. And he hasn't done anything bad to it, but it's such a high bar that he can't do it without putting modern stuff on the car. So it's silly. I hope someday we get back to this rolling idea of, after 25 years, nobody's daily driving these things, right? You and I have a lot of old cars. How many miles a year do you put on these things? Maybe 1,000 if you drive it a lot.
Yeah.
But most of us, we're putting a couple hundred miles a year on these cars, but we're paying the insurance, we're paying the registration. We just want to have the ability to not have to be treated like a daily driver car does in terms of emission. That's all.
Right. I mean, 90% of the cars that I have maybe get 10 to 15 miles on them a year.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's right. You've got more than me. And you know, the more you have, the more you have to say, okay, what am I going to drive this
week?
That's
right. That's right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Since we've seen each other at Amelia, I've been out to Glendale, Arizona, where I was at the Mecum auction, which was kind of a fun auction.
I'd like to hear your 2 cents on auctions, because I'm hearing stuff is up. I'm hearing stuff is down. I'm hearing some stuff is sliding and some stuff is setting records. I don't know what to make of this market, and I'd love your 2 cents. Just broad picture of where we're really at. Is this the time to buy?
So it's not up all the time. It seems to be up whenever I'm trying to buy a car. that seems the biggest problem to me is that, you know, I see a car and want to buy it, and all of a sudden I'm paying crazy money for it.
Yeah.
I did okay with my Talladega Torino that I took out to Glendale. I think
yeah.
The Corvettes at Glendale went just crazy this year. They must have had 15 or 18 split window Corvettes and a lot of resto mod.
63 is a special. For those who don't know, that's a 1 year only Corvette. The only year they made the split window was 63 in the coupe.
Right.
And they're special.
Yeah, special cars. But even at Amelia Island, you know, I think Broad Arrow did a great job this year. Their sell through rate was great. Bidding's got crazy numbers for some cars and not so crazy for others.
Yeah.
You know, there was no RM, of course, at Amelia this year. They were down in Miami.
Yeah. And Bonham's numbers were down because it seemed like they maybe didn't bring the very best cars, and people are passing on cars that have a little bit of hair on the dog, right?
Yeah, I think if you're just looking for a number three car, you know, that you're going to get a bargain right now because the number three cars aren't selling well, especially if they're no reserve. I was at Amelia and I bought a Cadillac for a client, and our top dollar was going to be $150,000. And I said, I don't think we'll have to go to that. I looked over and I saw who I was bidding against, and it was a really great friend of ours. I won't say who he is, but he's got plenty of spendable cash, and I'm bidding and he's bidding and we're looking at each other. And finally I ended up buying the car. Of course, I think we had to pay $210,000 at the hammer for it. But
for a 62 Cadillac, what 62
Cadillac? No, not
Cadillac
62, is... I'm sorry, 58 Cadillac, but it was a Series 62 Cadillac. And so it's a 58 Series 62.
Ah, okay.
But it is spectacular. Probably about $500,000 spent on the restoration. And so you're buying the restoration. So you're buying the car and you're getting a restoration for free, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's right.
Spectacular restoration on this car.
That is the problem that people have to think about. I see people that buy, like you said, a number three or a number four car, something that needs some work. It's going to need paint. It's going to need interior. And I say, you better do the math, because restoration, as you know, running F40 Motorsports, it's not cheap. And if you're trying to do a restoration cheap, you're going to get hosed. So a nice restoration on a car, if you're not careful, if you're buying a car or you're fixing up a car that doesn't have a super high blue book value, you're definitely going to spend more in restoration than the car's selling for. And if that's the case, just know that going in with eyes wide open, right?
That's right. And if you're buying a car at auction too, what you have to watch out for, if the paint is really spectacular and the interior is really spectacular, but you better look at the engine compartment and the underside of the car, because what happens is they run out of money. They spend all the money on the bodywork and the paint, the interior, and then it comes down to the mechanicals. And they say, well, we've totally run out of money. Let's just sell it at auction. And so you have to be very cautious of those things. You know, what looks good on the outside, maybe on the inside is not so.
Yeah, that's really good intel.
We see a lot of it coming into our shop where guys say, hey, it's a total restoration. We just had it done. We need you to do a couple of things on it. We put it up and I said, well, what happened? You forgot about doing the suspension. Oh, no, we just ran out of money. So these are things we all have to look at, you know, complete restorations, not total complete restoration sometimes.
Yeah. And one thing that really chaps me is when people do retail red. And retail red, for those who don't know, is like whatever the car was born in, they just say, go for a bright red because that's going to do well at auction. And as soon as you open the jams and you start looking around, you can see this. There's no way this car was born in red. And sure enough, they've done a retail red. And those people that do that are typically people that don't pull off every data plate. Those are the people that, you know, do every inch of the firewall. So you start looking around, you go, sure enough, it was born in brown or green. And boy, that chaps my hide because they've literally done it a disservice, because now if you ever want to make the car correct, you've got to take all that garbage back off the car, you know?
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
So I went to Glendale to sell my Talladega. I think we did real well. It hammered at $400,000.
Whoa, that's great.
Yeah, which was my reserve. So, well, with that. Then I came and I said, you know, I'm not going to buy any cars. I'm on this, where I'm selling a bunch of stuff at the moment. I sold probably three other cars in the past 2 months.
Yeah.
Trying to get the collection down to a manageable size. But I was walking around and I looked at, there was a Lincoln there that was concept car that was built on the T-Bird chassis. And it belonged to a guy in California. He passed away and his son was selling it. His last name was Powers.
Powers.
And he was a designer with General Motors and Ford. And so he had this car, and the minute I looked across two cars over, and there was a 67 Cadillac Eldorado, like brand new. And I just love that design of that car. I just think it's spectacular. Wayne Beatty was the head of that department at the time that car was designed. And Wayne had one down at the Savoy Museum a few weeks ago when I was down there, and I just fell in love with it over again. And so I paid too much and I bought a Cadillac Eldorado 67, but I just, you know, it's one of those cars that you buy it and sometimes you buy a car at an auction and the next day you go, what did I pay that money for? Oh, I regret it. I fell in love with the car even more the day I bought it.
That's great.
And so.
Yeah, that's called an auction hangover when you're like, why did I raise my hand so long?
Right.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, if you're still excited about the next day, you did the right thing. I remember walking into Bruce Canepa's shop down in Scotts Valley, and he was doing a body off on a 67 Eldorado and doing mild customization for a guy. You talk about going in deep. Can you imagine just blocking, sanding, and painting a 67 Eldorado? That's at Bruce Canepa's shop. You're talking $200,000 in paint all day long.
Right.
And that car was at the Grand National Roadster Show last year. And, you know, it's 67 Eldorado and a Continental Mark II and a couple of these cars, they were what I call born perfect. There's not a lot you can do to customize them because they're factory customs.
That's right.
You can pull some trim off and you can maybe flare the wheel wells or whatever, but you don't want to monkey with them because they were very well designed.
You know, the 67 Eldorado, of course, was the last of the great series of Riviera, Toronado, and then Eldorado. Yeah. Eldorado was the first front-wheel drive Cadillac. And so it was a pretty spectacular car. And the sharp edges on those cars are so fantastic. You know, the quarter panel top edge and then that little skinny taillight in the back, the rear glass on the car. It's just such a beautiful design.
When you think of General Motors in the 50s and 60s, the way that they could completely retool a car from the ground up year after year after year, there's nobody else that did it like General Motors. Honestly, no car company in the world in the 50s and 60s had more of a massive retooling for their cars. I think about a 53 Buick Skylark, radical car, right? 53 was that Eldorado Skylark Fiesta year, 53.
Right.
54, they totally redo the Skylark completely inside and out with those crazy tail fin taillights,
right.
The body, the dash, the grill, everything changed.
And it's amazing because they didn't sell that many of them.
No, a couple thousand if they were lucky.
Yeah, so a complete retooling for a couple of $1,000 production. It just doesn't make any sense. But they were looking at it at a different angle. It was people dreamt of having, but maybe couldn't afford. So you'd go buy the model that was one down from, or two down,
yep.
and two notches down from that. But you still owned a Cadillac or a Buick, you know, because now you say, hey, mine's almost like that Skylark or almost like that Eldorado, but yet it's not. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Great cars. Yeah. And then after that, I went to the Savoy Museum for the conference, the museum conference. And I'm finally getting 2 weeks off, and then I'm back on the road again. So,
And really quick, we should just mention the Savoy. It looks like you and I might be there together sometime later this summer to talk about movie cars, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. So I'm shipping down the Rain Man Buick and the War of the Roses Morgan that are in my collection. And there's going to be a lot of other movie cars. Ray Evernham's got the 58 Chevrolet from American Graffiti going down. And that's going to be fun. And hopefully somebody will see one of those cars from the Cars movie down there too.
We're hoping that we have Lightning McQueen there, life-size Lightning McQueen, which there's only a couple of them in the world and they're not easy to get moved around. So I'm working on that for the Savoy. So yep, more to come.
So because of that, what I did is I talked the museum into doing two seminars, one for the kids at noon on that Saturday that we're going to be there, where the kids can come in and we do a seminar for them individually, and then one for the adults in the evening, even though kids can still come to it, but it's a better time of the day. So it'll be a lot of fun doing that with you, Jay. It's always fun hanging out with you and talking about cars and talking classic cars, just like we are right now.
That's right. And hopefully we'll see Matt there too. We have the whole gang together. We can do a reunion. I love it.
Yeah. So what's next on your plate? Where are you going?
Well, before you know it, Pebble Beach will be here. But actually, before that, I will be going to Concours in Lugano, Switzerland, called Lugano Elegance. And then a week later, I'll be down at Villa d'Este. For those who, I don't know if I mentioned Villa d'Este before on a show, but it is incredible. Think about the European version of Pebble Beach. Only 50 cars. Only 8 judges. I'm one of the 8 or 9 jury members of this. It's put on by BMW Classic, but it is a show, a true show of elegance on Lake Como on the south end. And the cars are truly one of one. They can only be invited once in their life to this event. And it's phenomenal. And I was very, very fortunate to become a judge there last year. So I'll be doing that again this year. So getting ready for Villa d'Este and now Lugano the weekend before. So I'll have a week in Italy and hopefully goof around in Italy and look at some cars while I'm over there.
That's great. I just got the word that the Cadillac Valkyrie that we're restoring, which was the Brooke Stevens design car, is going to be accepted to Villa d'Este next year. So we'll be going in 2025. So that's kind of a cool thing.
Let's do some shows there together.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'm not going this year, but maybe next year.
Next year.
We're going down in next weekend. We'll be down, the weekend after, because next weekend's Easter. So the weekend after, we'll be down at Charlotte Motor Speedway for the Smith Invitational. So there's going to be 30 cars that are invited to be shown at the track, some really high-end cars. And so Ralph, my buddy Ralph's going down with us and a bunch of other friends. Ray Evernham is the guy that helps us put this all together. And then the AACA National regional event. Down there. So the AACA is having a show on the outside parking lot. We've got our cars on the inside of the track. And then there's a huge gathering of car clubs on the inside. So it's quite a day at Charlotte.
I think I really like to come to the Smith Invitational one day. If I can be invited to the Smith Invitational, I'd like to come.
We're going to make sure you're invited next year. There's a new track that they're building. It's a road course, sort of like Goodwood. They want to have a type of a race a social event down there. So they're working on that. Track's all done from what I understand, and they're starting to build the buildings. So it's going to be a thing where car clubs can go in, vintage car clubs, and go down and race their cars, and then hopefully have that Goodwood vibe, right in Charlotte.
What's your weekend again for the Smith Invitational?
So we're going down on Friday. They have a cocktail party over at the new track for us. And then Saturday is the show. And then they have a banquet on Saturday night right there at the track that overlooks the whole track right up in the beautiful tower.
But the dates are?
I think it's like the 8th and 9th of April.
Of April. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
So we'll be down there for that. And then Wilbraham Hill Climb's coming up. The Audrian. We're going to be doing the vintage tour. You're coming out for that?
I think I'm going to try and come out for vintage tour. I've never made it for that. I think it'd be a blast to do that.
All right. So I'm bringing two cars. I'm going to be bringing the 1901 Oldsmobile. And then I'm going to be bringing the 1908 Baker Electric.
Oh, that's cool.
And we are
going to
see if we can do the 30-mile venture on one charge of batteries in it. So, but we will have a backup set of batteries in the chase car just in case it runs out of juice and we have to switch them. I was thinking about putting a little trailer on the back of it with a hitch and having a Honda generator on the back to charge the batteries if we're driving.
Maybe you could get a vest made of AA batteries with some leads hanging off of it.
Yeah, well, we're just talking to our friend Waller yesterday, and he offered up a couple of double A's. He said maybe that would help you out.
Wayne, something I forgot as we were talking, I think that we have to recognize this week, is we lost a legend in the design world who passed away last week, is Marcello Gandini. And Gandini, for those of you who don't know that name, yes, he worked under Bertone, but this is the guy who designed some of the most beautiful Italian cars of the 60s. We're talking about
Lamborghini Miura,
the Miura, the 308 GT4, actually, the Lancia Stratos.
Right.
I mean, it goes on and on. And he lived a good life. He lived up to 85, and he was definitely slowing down there at the end. But you talk about a legacy of 60s and 70s automotive design. He was one of the best.
Yeah. We're having a class of his cars, actually, at Lime Rock this year. I'm sorry, Greenwich. And then, of course, Pebble's going to have that. Ken Gross is putting that on, wedge cars of that era.
I'll be helping to judge that class. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, they're going to be a great class. Well,
we're
both going to be real busy in the upcoming weeks. So I hope you enjoy yourself. Stay healthy. That's the key to life.
Yes.
Health is wealth.
Yes.
And we look forward to speaking to everyone next week. We'll get together again and talk classic cars.
Sounds good. We'll see you then.